Napoleon in Exile, 1815 to 1821. Hurried preparations. Napoleon's getting ready to leave. On the HMS Bellerophon, things were frantic. The ship had been cleared for action. In other words, getting ready to attack. So they'd taken all of the walls down for the different quarters, and everything was cleared away so you would have a nice, smooth battle. But with all the bulkheads down, that meant that now that that wasn't going to happen, the cabins had to be reconstructed. And then they had to check their stores of supplies for all of the people that were going to be coming on. Then two worrisome pieces of information arrived. One of them, at 10 p.m., a boat from shore dropped off a man who claimed Napoleon in the morning had been at La Rochelle in one of the small chasse-maries, and that he intended to escape by sea via the Perturas Breton during the night. Maitland confronted Las Casas, who reassured him that wasn't going to happen. Then second, at 3 a.m., another boat arrived with the same story. Maitland simply decided to trust Las Casas' word of honor. But Captain Maitland was concerned, especially since he had just sent one of his three ships off to England. Napoleon's entourage certainly spent their hours before their departure from France in a calmer atmosphere. The days of indecision and inactivity had ended, and a course of action that was accepted by nearly all of them had been agreed to. The danger of arrest by the Bourbons or the Allies faded. The English warships, which until just recently had been a threat, now actually became their sanctuary. True, they were putting themselves in the hands of the enemy, but at least they would be temporarily safe on the ship. They also had Captain Maitland's assurance that surely they would be well received in England. They had seen the HMS Slaney sail in the evening and knew that Baron Gourgaud was on board, going to visit the Prince Regent with Napoleon's letter. Further, their hopes for the future had been raised by stories of the English people and the English life that Las Casas and Madame Bertrand had recounted, as both had actually lived in England for a time. Now, no one knows to what degree Napoleon shared these sentiments to the entourage. Certainly his abdication statement, his letter to the Prince Regent, and his statement to Bertrand on the night of July the 13th indicate his awareness of the deep-seated animosities of the English and their allies towards him. Napoleon could not have foreseen that the ministers of the Allied powers on March the 13th, 1815, at Vienna, had declared him to be the enemy, the disturber of the world, and an outlaw deserving of public vengeance. Whatever rights Napoleon might claim from England, he knew now that the protection of their laws had been officially denied him. Still, Napoleon had always been enough of a romantic to gamble on the grand gesture and trust it to dazzle his opponents in the withdrawing from their position. If this gamble succeeded, his exit from Europe's political scene would be as memorable as his entrance upon it had been. One could actually say he did this twice. The exit to St. Helena, ultimately, and then an even bigger event with his return to France in 1840 with his body, which ultimately led to the rise of Louis Napoleon Bonaparte, or Napoleon III. So he certainly is capable of this grand gesture, even in death. Napoleon had also learned that the safest step now left to him was simply to board the HMS Bellerophon. That night, Becker brought Napoleon news that he had received from Captain Filbert from the frigate Sale, that Bonifex had shown Filibert a letter from the Count de Jucourt, who was the new minister of the Marine, or of the Navy, appointed by Louis XVIII. It ordered the captain to keep Napoleon on the frigate, on the sail. That was his first order. The second order was to prevent Napoleon from landing on French soil. So you weren't even supposed to let him get off the ship. And third, prevent Napoleon from communicating with the British ships, which he'd already done on multiple occasions. So it's pretty obvious that in a very short amount of time, the government's going to order him arrested. Now, Captain Philibert, out of sympathy for Napoleon and a desire to help him, delayed executing the orders. But he couldn't safely delay much longer. If Napoleon did go on board the Bellerophon quickly, the captain would have, if he didn't do it quickly, the captain would have to arrest him. So this certainly speeded up the process. They almost waited a little bit too long on this situation. So we've had the negotiations, the discussions. Gogard is off to England. Napoleon and his entourage have made up their mind. Now we're going to have an interesting situation in that the day Napoleon comes to and enters the Bellerophon is the same day that Admiral Haddam's flagship arrives. And there's going to be a concern, is Haddam going to want to take Napoleon rather than Maitland? So there's going to be that little discussion, which is going to come up in our next show. And also I will talk about the historical background of the Bellerophon, which is a quite decorated and famous ship in the British Navy at this particular time. So that's where we're headed. We're almost ready to set sail to go to England and then ultimately to St. Helena. Now, the sources for this is The 50 Days in England by Duhamel, Napoleon After Waterloo by Thornton, and Napoleon St. Helena by Gilbert Martineau. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs. And of course, if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.